It gives me great pleasure to introduce Dr. Darlene Juska, a good friend of Jim's, and we're happy to have her with us this morning. Dr. Juska is a department head and an associate professor at the University of Regina. She's the coordinator of the Women's and Gender Studies program and also works in the Religious Studies department. She has conducted research and published on the phenomenology of religion, ritual, myth, and symbols, and on religion and feminism. Fascinating stuff. Her work is multidisciplinary, and she has a BA in Classical Studies from the University of Waterloo, an MA in Religion and Culture from Wilfrid Laurier University, and a PhD in Religious Studies from the University of Toronto. So we are greatly privileged, Dr. Juska, to welcome you this morning.
But maybe... Okay. There. Okay.
Want to sing a song?
No. No, you wouldn't want me to do that. Okay, and then this I just have to open. Okay. And then if it doesn't come up, which it's not, then I press this. Okay.
Okay, there's a green light for
that. I can hear it, yes, coming up, so good. And there we go. Okay. So hello, everyone. And thank you so much for inviting me here today. I'm going to talk a little bit about Santeria. And Santeria is a system of belief and practice that you will find in Cuba. It's also known as Le Regla de Ocha, which is the rule of the Orisha, or La Régulion Lukumi, and it is a syncretic system of belief and practice, as I said, found in Cuba. And what it does is combine Yoruba and Spanish Catholicism. So those are the two systems that come together. There's also some Dahomey, that's Royal Regalia for the Orisha. So it's really an interesting syncretic system. You'll also find variant versions of it in Brazil, for example, and that's Candomblé. And if you went to Haiti, then you would find Vodun, and that's a variant version of this as well. Vodun combines Dahomey systems, which is West Africa, and French Catholicism, right? So different kinds of combinations. The folks that we're looking at are Southwest Nigerian, and that's the language. Yoruba is the language that they speak, and then it's also called Yoruba land that we have here. Okay, and even though we have those variations, the variations are like you might find in Christianities, right? So they're Baptists and Lutherans and Anglicans. So you'll find variation in terms of this kind of system, which is really focused on the Orisha powers that are here in existence, and that's what the Orisha are part of. And it really deals with the here and now in many, many ways. And it's highly ritualized, which is one of the reasons. Now, this is, as I say, Royal Regalia, and that is for the Orisha. And I'm going to talk more about them. But each one is assigned a color that they will have. They will have particular animals, all sorts of different things. And then there are offerings that you make as well. They have feast days as well, because of that combination with Spanish Catholicism that we see among the Santeria. Now, this is this image here is it's called Palo Monte, and it's Nkumyu, who is a guardian of the crossroads and clearer of paths. Now, Palo is a little; it is different. It has shares some continuity with Santeria, but it's a little darker. There's a tendency to think, well, in this one, some of the ritual engages working with body parts. So people tend to frown on that. Right, it's a little Frankenstein business going on. People don't like that. Now, the history of Santeria, and this is why I put Palo Monte up here, it is, it emerges alongside of and in the context of slavery. Right, so it's going to have all sorts of aspects of that, and this is some of what you can see in Lucero Mundo, who opens the paths, and that relates to some of the resistance, right, that slaves put against Spanish land, you know, plantation owners, as well as the government that were oppressing and enslaving African Americans. And what we see in Cuba then is that we have a number of waves of Africans being brought into Cuba, surviving what is called the Middle Passage. And that is a horrific passage where many, many died in terms of slavery and being brought to Cuba. You also had indigenous folks there who are also enslaved. Now, this first group of slaves that came, they were slaves who were worked to death. They were worked 20 hours a day. They were given no medication. And the reason was because you had a cheap resource, which is you had indigenous people, populations that you've enslaved, and you have the Middle Passage. So now you're bringing slaves over. It is only later that you will see the so-called breeding of Africans. Indigenous people by this time in Cuba are completely wiped out by the practices that are colonial practices that are going on. So you would work in the sugar mills, you would work on the coffee plantations, or you would work in the mines, and in all these places you would die, right? You equally were anticipated that you grew your own food, so you were underfed as well. No such thing as doctors. So a lot of this healing then has to be, and care has to be community generated, and particularly in the face of oppression that we have going on. Now, and your only relief came in two ways, escape or die, right? So you have women at this time who are enslaved, who are using plants in order to abort their children because they do not want their children to be born into slavery, into this life, right? And these all become markers then of these heathens in terms of how the white Spanish colonizers are conceptualizing the world, pardon me. Now, it's condemned by the British, right? The Middle Passage. They don't do that because they're better than anyone else. It's got to do with economics. And so by 1868, slavery now from enslavement in Africa and being brought to the New World ceases to exist. And that is when you start to get the breeding, right? So-called breeding of slaves. So during this period of time, and that's 1850 to 1870, 34.52% of the Africans brought to Cuba were Lukumi folk, and that's from southwestern Nigeria. And they're going to speak various dialects of Yoruba, but they're going to come together. 1835, 1875, you have 250,000 Africans who suffer the Middle Passage to Cuba. So what happens is you get strong, where you have slavery, you have entire peoples almost removed. They come together in the enslaved context, and then they have their own systems of belief and practice in order to survive this terrible, terrible ordeal that is going on. Now, how do we get from Yoruba ancestor worship, because that's largely what you have, and you have a panentheism, which is in everything that exists, is the joy, the sacredness of life, right? So it occupies, infuses everything, this divine element. So how do we get from, Yoruba and what we have there to the system of Santeria? Well, what we have is the, as I said, the merging of Yoruba systems and Spanish folk systems. And this happens in the 18th and the 19th century. So it's not the Catholicism you know now, right? Because there's always, concerted efforts from the papacy to clean it up and get all that folk stuff out of it. But in the 18th and 19th centuries, that's what you're seeing play out. And you'll have similarities in terms of the system, how it's going to line up with the Catholic system when they both come together. You end up with a supreme deity, which will be Olodumare. And then you have others who come into the system, and they're known as Orisha. They are also in Nigeria, which I'll talk about in a minute. They come together, and you have Yamaya, you have Chango, you have Oshun, who I'll talk about, Ogun, you have Orunmila, or Orula is his name, Alegwa, that's another, Obatala, and so forth. And each of these in Nigeria would have their own priests or priestesses, and in terms of gender matches up with deity, right? You have to have the right gender to fit your deity. So Yamaya, her priests will be female. Whereas Ogun's priests will be male, right? You have that real divide. It's a sort of very clear separate sphere gender ideology that's operating here. But when you come, so that's external in Nigeria, and when you come to Cuba, one of the things that happens is you don't have the same kind of connection to the land. So what do? You internalize, right? And so you then start into this play, and there's this idea of we have a family, right? And this is how the Orisha are understood. They're unified in terms of a family. And then you have followers then who really sort of... That the Orisha will occupy your head. So we've moved from here outside where the priestess and Yemaya's altar might be to it's all going to take place in the body now, right? So when things are taken away, what do you have left? What are the only things really that the slave has? Right? And not even they have it, but at least there's some illusion of that, which is their own bodies, right? That's their vehicle now. Right, that they're going to have. Okay. So we can see this in terms of how some of this plays out and the syncretism plays out when we see the initiation. So in the first initiation, one is given the necklaces, and these are called elikes of the five major royal Orisha, and that's Yamaya, Obatala, Oshun, Chango, and Alegwa. In the second initiation, one then receives the three warriors, and the three warriors are Alegwa, and that's, you see, the elikes that he has, those are his colors, so they'll be black and red, right? And then if you look at these shapes in the back, that is the representation of Alegwa, and typically you'll get with a face made out of cowrie shells. That's what that is. So you see the mouth and the eyes, right? And all that is Alegwa. And that would be on my altar, because Alegwa is very, very important. Alegwa opens the gateways, right? He allows us to contact, to be in touch with the Orisha. So in the second one, I receive my warriors, and that's Alegwa, and the other I'll receive is Ochosi, and Ochosi is a hunter, and then I receive also Ogun, and Ogun is a warrior. Ogun is connected to metal and the like. And then in my third initiation, which is called Asentio, and Asentio is a 7-day ceremony, and it's at that point my ruling Orisha would be determined. That is, each of us is born before birth an Orisha will be attached to each and every one of us. But you don't know. And it's with the help, right, in terms of the ritual and taking the path of the saints, right, or in the case of the Orisha, that you will learn in your initiation which Orisha is on your head. That is controlling your life, your faith, fate. And when things are going bad, that's the one you go to, right, who is hopefully going to help you. It's the third initiation. I become a Santera or a Santero, right? So Santera is just female. Santero is male. And my feet now are on the path of the saint. So having unified the Yoruba system, this new system is brought in very close relationship with the Catholic system, as I talked about, and particularly the saints. The saints and the Orisha are going to be connected. And you can see this here. This is the Virgin of Regla, and it's also Yemaya, right? And Yemaya, she is a deity of, she's maternal, she's a mother deity, she's the deity of the seas. Right, that's in her positive aspect. She'll have her Christian camino, and a camino is a way, and that will be the Virgin of Regla. That is her Christian camino. She'll have others. All of the Orisha have many, many paths. Right, so the Orisha are brought into direct alignment. So we have, for example, Chango, right, and Chango is a warrior. He has a double-edged axe, so that means he's like he can cause destruction, or he can be protective, right? That's what that double-edged axe refers us to. Well, in the Christian system, he gets connected to the saint, Saint Barbara. So one of the things you see, the gender doesn't have to match, right? In terms of when I'm linking Orisha and I'm linking saints, it's more about who the saint is, what kind of powers they have, and what's connected to them. So Saint Barbara becomes the Christian Camino of Chango. And this mechanism of syncretism was a process of really determining shared interests between the Orisha and the Catholic saint. And that's how I would link them. So for example, Ogun, right? He's a warrior. He is the Orisha of iron, of technology, and of the earth. He's very earthy. He is, as a warrior, he is not in the plantation. He's not in the plant, a slave owner's house. He's in the forest, right? So Ogun has never, never been enslaved. Right, and that's what he represents to the people. That kind of strength comes with Ogun. He symbolizes immense strength, right, of a physical nature, and this gets connected to Saint Peter. Right, Saint Peter is seen as a strong foundation of Catholicism. Catholicism, you know, they see Peter in that particular way. So Peter as a rock. Right, endurance gets connected to Ogun as in iron, right, the strength that both have. And equally, animals will make a difference. So Ogun, his animal is the rooster. And and what we find also with Peter is that an animal associated with Peter is the cock. So bam, the two come together and they nicely synchronize. And that's some of what we see between those two particular figures. The Orisha, they're going to have little pots. And in those pots are going to be things sacred to them. So Ogun, and I, like as a practitioner, if I were on the path of the saints, then I would have the pot for Ogun, say he was on my head, which he wouldn't be because I'm a girl. But anyway, that in that pot, I would have these things that represent him. 7 iron implements, right? Because he's iron. So I would have a rake, a spade, a pick, a chisel, a hammer, a knife, and the knife will be important, an anvil, and a machete, right? And then the favorite sacrificial animal that comes into play. And this is Oshun, and Oshun is our Orisha name, and the Virgin Caridad del Cobre, which refers us to the Lady of Charity. and she gets connected to Oshun. And Oshun is a very young Orisha, love, desire, joy. She's connected to rivers, right, and that sort of thing when we're in Nigeria. So she takes and brings this back to her when she's in Santeria. Now, some ask why there is an effort to link the saints to the Orisha, and I can suggest a couple of possible, not there'll be multiple reasons, but I'll put a few out there. During the period of slavery in Cuba, Spanish slave owners, under the law of the king, had to baptize all of their slaves. And this meant that priests are going to be active in rural and urban locations, but more in urban than rural, right? And you'll see that play because they're Orisha of the forest and Orisha of the town, right? And there's an interesting play, like this is playing out here as well. And it'll have to do with the big house and then the field, who's working in the field, and then who's escaped and moved beyond the field. So you realize that slavery is shaping the narrative, and resisting slavery is shaping Santeria in terms of how it understands itself. So what happens is that priests are around, and one of the things that they do is, in order to explain Catholicism, they start pulling on the Yoruba system and say, oh yeah, well, God is like Oldumare, right? That's one of the things they say. He rules the existence of the, rules all in terms of the universe and the source of existence. The Orisha were like saints. They are brought here to guide the people. They act as intermediaries, just as saints do in the Catholic Church. And you start to see that's how these two, so priests will actually start the retelling of Catholicism to the enslaved folks. And this then starts to blend into their own system. A second is that when you oppress a group of people, you're going to be nervous all the time. When are they going to come up against you? You're always worrying when there are too many of them together, that sort of thing. You also have escaped slaves and real resistance to slavery in Cuba. And remember, we had in Haiti a mass slave revolt, which freed the slaves, and this occurred in 1791. Right? And they gain independence in 1803. So this is all playing out in the Mediterranean, colonization, and Santeria is going to be part of this story, right? Part of the story of revolution, of resistance, and so forth as it plays out. So it's going to be bad, right? Because your colonizers who have Christianity with them, Catholic Christianity, right? They're going to demonize anything that's coming up against them. They did it with the Protestants, and they're sure going to do it with anyone else who's anyone in the New World. And they certainly did do that. So they started to suppress all the activities, and that meant particularly funerals, which were important. And this was really a gathering place where lots of ritual took place. You had celebrations as well. So the effort was to suppress all of this. But in urban areas, they weren't able to do it as well, because you have slavery plays a different, has a different face in urban areas. And oftentimes they have more movement, freedom of movement, than anyone who's on the plantation. And that means that you have slaves running messages for the master, and they're also meeting with people, right? They can actually bring people together. They can actually really do some interesting political organization, and that's what they did. They gathered together in different cabiedos, and these are chapter houses that are attached to the cathedral. So even as the elite Catholics are oppressing all this, those who aren't are resisting the oppression, right? So it's never just all the Catholics are bad, because they're not, right? They are actually helping out. They're meeting in chapter houses connected to the cathedrals, and really they're you know, doing lots of resistance stuff, even as they're practicing Santeria. So one of the things you do when you do this, and I'm in the chapter house, and, you know, I've got a priest to deal with who's just not going to be happy about my Ogun and my dead rooster, right? What do? Well, that's St. Barbara, right? So they all get these names. And so you have this double face that plays, and you have the face that everyone else can see, and it's called the Christian Camino that applies to each Orisha. And then you have the faces that only those who are initiated into Santeria, only those who see the other faces of the Orisha. And this is Obatala, and he's the father of Orisha. He is seen as pure, connected to the air. He creates the earth, and he's connected to Mary, Our Lady of Mercy. Right? So there we go. No gender, no concern about gender at all. And he will never possess anyone, because Santeria is a possession, a system of belief and practice in part. But Obatala is never one who possesses. Obatala is a little bit removed, and really has more connection with the Orun, which is the place where spirits are, right, than any other of the Orisha. So I'm going to say a few words about the Orisha and the Santeria worldview. So existence is divided between the world of the spirits and the world of humans, all of which is overseen by Olodumare. In existence, there are three principles of power, the Iwa, or the power that permits existence in general, right? So the Iwa, the Eshe, or the power of the realization of existence. That is the dynamism that we have that allows me to move, that allows everything to grow, right? So you have the blueprints, and then you have the effort to, you have to put, you know, put real material in there so you can get it all going, so you can create something. And so you have the Eshe. And that's the power of realization in existence. And then you have the Abu, or the power that promises purpose and provides aim and direction for the Eshe, right? So you get your, you know, you have your existence, you have the shell that's animated, and then you have direction, right? Where are you going to go? What's the meaning of it all, right? That sort of thing that we all look for. Right, supposedly, when we're doing these things. Now, in terms of divination, for example, the Iwa is related to the personality of the individual. That is what I'm born with. The Eshe will be my problem, and my problem is always understood as an imbalance. Right, that's how problems, not a sin. There's no such thing as sin. It's an imbalance, right? Things are out of balance in your life or out of balance in the community, and your job is to put everything back in balance. That's what you have to ascertain, and that's why you approach the Orisha, and they will help you. The world of the spirits inhabited by the Orishas and the ancestors, that's the Orun, which is the world of, while the world of plants, humans, and non-human animals is the Eye. Right, so we are the physical world, and the worlds, as I said, they have to stay in balance. And if they're out of balance, then there's all sorts of trouble. Now we have lots of different Orisha; they're numerous, but some of the more significant. Alegwa, he's one. And as I say, Alegwa allows us, the Orisha and the humans, to actually talk. Communicate. Alegwa gave the Baba Leo, who is the high male priest that you find in Santeria, gave him the Ife table, which is the table of prophecy, right? So the Baba Leo is able to prophesy and determine what's going on and help you in terms of your own life or the life of your community. Orunmila, and otherwise known as Orula, and he gets connected to the Francis of Assisi, right? And he was there when humanity was created by Obatala. He also knows the fate of all humans. So this is one of the reasons he's able to, well, he actually works, Legwa gives him the Ifa table, and it's then assists the Baba Leo. So he's involved in that whole prophecy business that we have. Obatala is the owner of everybody's head. So all your heads, if you were Santeria, you'd be under Obatala, right? And then it's only later that your actual Orisha would be identified. Chango, he is the warrior whose violence can have good or ill effects, as I said, symbolized by his double-headed axe. Ogun, the smithy Orisha, who is among the three warriors. And Ogun is connected to Peter. Chango is connected to Barbara, St. Barbara. I think I confused those two. And then Ochozi, as I mentioned, he is another warrior, and he is a hunter as well. Ogun is important because Ogun is the knife, and Ogun will make every sacrifice. Ogun makes all the blood sacrifices, because in Santeria, non-human animal sacrifice. You have Yamaya, who I've talked about in terms of her connection to the sea. You have Babaleo, who is connected to Lazarus, and what he does is he cures disease. He's the person who knows all the herbs, and he can help you with disease. Oshun, Our Lady of Charity, and she is fresh water. I mentioned her as well. And Oya, and she's the Orisha of the cemetery, and she's a very angry person, or Orisha, rather. Largely because she used to be the Orisha of the seas, but Yamaya tricked her, and she ended up in the cemetery, and she wasn't very happy about that. So Yamaya and Oya are always at war, and that means the houses, the one if it belongs to Yamaya and another belongs to Oya, they will be in conflict because your deities, or Orisha rather, are in conflict. They're not really gods, but they're not, they are sort of, right? It's hard to figure out other than to call them Orisha. It's the only thing I can come up with these guys. Now this is, we worked with some people in Cuba, and that's where these pictures are coming from in terms of when we were there. And this is the ancestor shrine. And no matter what you do, every ritual you do, you always begin with your ancestors. Right? You always acknowledge them, and you have to keep them cool, right? Keep them relaxed, cool. So one of the things you do is you'll have stones connected to ancestors. You see that's the altar there. You see dead and rotting fruit will be put out, that sort of thing, because those are appropriate offerings that you would give. And if you felt things are out of control, you pour cool water on, right? That cools them down. It does. It also does for the Orisha. Now, to ensure continued balance for communities and individuals in their lives, the Santeras actively engage the Orisha through veneration by the maintenance of altars. So this is where the ancestors will be fed, and cooled. You'll make sacrificial offerings, which in the nature of which will depend on the Orisha, right? So Ogun, rooster, right there, that you have those kinds of connection. Obatala is a dove, right? And that's, you know, and you can see why they would choose some of the ideas. Ancestors, it's a variable, but goat often comes up in terms of what kind of offerings that I would make to them. The palenque, which in Santeria is a dramatized dance festival, and what you have are music and dancing. And all the Orisha have particular music. Each of them has their own rhythms associated with them. Each of them will have multiple dances associated with them. And so when you're in the fiesta, right, there's a particular one that they have. It's called the Toque de Santos, and it's a drumming fiesta, and where you recognize the Orisha, but the toque speaks to touch in Spanish. So it's a fiesta where the Orisha are going to touch you, or at least they're invited to touch you. And part of my honoring of them is the dance, is the song, is the music. Right? Both those are very strong. Lots of fun. We were to one of those where we saw that. And it was really, and you can see, on occasion, people become possessed, right, who are adherents to particular Orisha. We were there. There was no possession at that time that we were there. And these are the soperos, right? Soup tureens. They're really elegant soup tureens, and that's where all the stuff connected to, you know, sacred items connected to the Orisha, they would all be in there. And then the other thing that you have right here right? These are the necklaces, right? That you get, first and second and third stage initiation. So this one is Yemaya, right here. This is Oshun, right here. And I know because of the beads. The yellow is and gold. Those colors are with Oshun. Yamiya, because of the sea, blue and white, those colors associated with her. This, the iron, that would be no other than Ogun, right? Because the iron connected to him. And this is Ramon. This is the person that we worked with. He's a Babaleo. And this here is a Legua, right? That is the Terrene or the Sapero for a Legua. Pardon? Okay, I have to wrap up soon. Okay. Maybe I'll leave this one alone and just go to jump to possession. Okay, and that's the initiation. We did three levels of initiation when we were there. Possession, which is a real play in this. No, I wasn't possessed. Thank you very much. It's initiated by the drums. The drums are music. The drums are the rhythm of the saints. And that's when you invite them. You invite them to the joy that you're having, the dance, the food, the life that is there. And that in itself, that is a gift to the Orisha. And there's Eshe Alegua and Gateway to the Orishas. So even if I'm doing all these wonderful things and things are still crappy in my life or crappy in my community, what can I do? And what I can do is I can do prophecy. I can speak to the Babaleos. There are various groups that, who do this. The Baba Loka, that is one who is not a Babaleo, but he can do three levels of divination. Equally, Ialoka, that's the Madrina or female version, and she can do three levels. The fourth level of divination, that is reserved for the Babaleo. Now, this is Ramon, because Ramon is a Babaleo, and this is the first level, and anyone can do these. This is the Obi, and this is just coconut shell, and you'll use four of them. And this kind of divination, yes and no answers is basic. Yeah, and yes, no, maybe, yes, right? Those are the kinds of answers you can get from that kind of divination. This is the Caracoles, and I think I have that. No, that's the second, sorry. That's the third, actually. I don't have the Caracoles, or did I bring that in? I thought he did. I don't have the Caracoles. The next one that you have are Caracoles, and then that's when you're using cowrie shells and the like, and that's when you then speak to the Orisha and you divine what the issues are. And the whole divination thing is extremely complex, and I can't get into it because we don't have enough time here. This is the chain. It's called the divining chain, Okule. And it connects with the table of Ife, which is what you see right there. Now, these are Babaleos. This is Ramon. This is the sort of first Babaleo, but it's also a Legua, right? So it does that little play, or a Rula, so they can play out. And there is the Ife table. And the Ife table is what I would use, right, in terms of prophecy. And there's all sorts of you sacred knots and all sorts of things that are connected to this. And you use these particular things. They're called, there's stories or verses, that are connected, and they're myths and the like that connect to, the Orisha. And I can't tell you much about those. I'm almost done. Okay. And this is Palo divination, which is a completely other form of divination. And this is Ramon with the royal robes. So basically what we have is that we have a very complex system here, one that's come about in slavery and oppression, one that is very dynamic and uses ritual in order to engage and really brings the Orisha and those participants in very close contact with each other, possession being one of them. Okay. My time is up, and then some, so thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Darlene.
You're welcome.
We read on the back of our order of service that Unitarians draw their traditions from their understanding of the wisdom of various of the world's religions, and that's what inspires us to understand our own beliefs and enriches our spiritual life. So we thank you so much for sharing with us today. Are there questions? Oh, my goodness.
I have 1,000 questions, but I'm only going to ask one. The relationship between Santeria and Voodoo.
The relationship is, it varies because you have Dahomey-speaking people, but they do have some of the same conceptual ideas. Importance of ancestors, and non-human animal sacrifice, and the idea of possession. So those are shared between Voodoo and Santeria. Voodoo also has other aspects of it that Santeria doesn't, but Palo will. So the whole notion of zombies and all that doesn't come up in Santeria, but will come up in Palo, right? So the one festival, one ritual, I would put someone under my control. So it's very similar to the Voodoo.
I have a question. Hillary sure. And I were in Cuba last year, and we ran across various things, such as sacrificial areas around the river in Havana. Very interesting, and we didn't quite know what we were seeing. We knew it was, you know, Santeria. And at one point, we went to a cathedral because we did a bit of everything, talking to a priest, and we said, "Well, what do you think about Santeria?" Because we knew it had a huge influence in Cuba. Is it 30 or 60% of the population? It's giant, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The priest said, "Well, we have a strange relationship because we kind of like it because Santeria have to be Catholics before they're Santeria."
Yes.
So it brings them into the church.
Yeah, yes.
And I'm just, my sort of general question is this still a religion of a resistance, do you think, given the Cuban government, you know, and the nature of the religion? Is still resistance going on somehow in Santeria?
I think there are two things. Yes, it is still resistance, because the Cuban government they took an atheistic stance. And so Santeria was, even though it was there, it was underground, or the real stuff is underground. But you also have tourism so what you have is a melding of ritual, like, you know, that Santeria has now become a public tourist attraction, but it's so supposed real practice is still oppressed or suppressed in that context. So it's a real contradiction. Yeah.
We'll take one more question in view of the time that it's 11:37.
Yeah. Happy to.
Thank you, Darlene. This is really interesting. It brings me up to date a little bit. I lived in Cuba in the 1970s, and at that time, all religion was suppressed, and Santeria was really, it was still there, and it was clear it was there, and people thought of it as something kind of spooky. And when I say people, I guess what I really meant was colonizer descendants and foreigners who lived there thought of it as something spooky. But you occasionally ran across some of these images and altars.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, a lot of what you were showing there was, I've seen stuff like that.
Yes, yeah.
But in this congregation last year, we were looking at different religions, and Yoruba came up, and I read quite a bit and listened in this group, and I was really quite surprised since then to hear in songs, in raps, in different things, there's this underlying sense. Now, do you have a sense of how pervasive some of the beliefs and practices and symbols are in, just in, let's say, North American culture right now?
I think they're stronger than, there are a number of communities. There are Vidun communities, Santeria communities, Candomblé communities, Umbanda, that's another one. And they're all very similar. They share some ideas, and particularly oppression, and particularly emerging from and dealing with resistance, right? So they share some of that. In North America, it's, you'll have, like you, I don't know if you've ever read Karen McCarthy Brown, A Voodoo Priestess in Brooklyn. It's great. It's really good. And she's an anthropologist. You'll have pockets, Sandra, but it's not that widespread. And considering, and Cuba, you also have Espiritism there, which is closer to, I would say, the Baptist Christianity than the Catholic. But there still is, the Spirit comes among you, right? So you'll touch by the Spirit, so you hear that evangelical Christian play out. But how far it is, I don't think it's that much. You may have, as I say, pockets.
Thank you so much, Dr. Driska. Really interesting. And for those of you who have traveled, I'm sure you've seen Black Madonnas elsewhere and roosters on top of the cross on a Catholic church. It's very, it's out there, yeah. Really interesting. Thank you so much for enlightening us about that.